from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in the hour ahead, over 6,600 people are homeless in San Francisco. That's according to a 2015 count by the city. And it includes not just people living on the streets, but those residing in shelters, cars, and other temporary locations. As part of Forum's In My Experience series and as part of the San Francisco Homeless Project media collaboration, homeless Bay Area residents take us inside their day-to-day lives and share some of the personal stories behind the statistics. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. We've been spending, as you well know, a good deal of time this week, along with other media outlets, focusing on problems and possible solutions related to the ongoing crisis of homelessness here in the Bay Area. In this Forum hour, we talk to people who are homeless, and we hear their stories and concerns and what they feel needs to be done. And let me introduce you to the four people who have joined me this hour and are joining us, joining you, but they're here in studio with us. Jackie Juarez is homeless. She's been living in a tent with her fiancé. She's also pregnant. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Mark, as he prefers to be called, is homeless, currently living in his truck, actually. He's been homeless for about a year, and he's choosing not to use his last name on air for privacy purposes. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
Let me also welcome Pastor Elaine Amos, who's here with us, homeless, currently lives in the Navigation Center, a temporary housing center for homeless people on 16th and Mission. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Michael.
And we also welcome Hermione Taylor, who is a homeless student. She's a homeless student at Skyline College. She's 24. She's studying to be a paralegal. She's part of the school's Guardian Scholars Program, which provides academic and financial support to college-bound students transitioning out of foster care. And welcome, Hermione Taylor.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, I'm glad to have you all here. And let me begin, Jackie. Jackie is close to us here. This tent is really in our hood, so to speak, that she lives in. And first of all, when did you set up your tent? Let's get to that. And why did you set up your tent?
Well, we set up like almost 3 months ago. We had some problems where we were staying, and so we had to leave. And we were staying behind Best Buy, and everything we owned was taken, as I'm almost due pregnant. And I also have a chronic disease. My fiance is diabetic. And so we decided to move behind U-Haul. And we've been there for like maybe 3 weeks now.
And that's okay for now?
I mean, no, it's not okay. No? They've came out and we just got a ticket like three or four days ago for blocking the sidewalk.
And you also, when you talk about all your things were taken, this was a police action with things.
Yeah,
were,
it was.
They're supposed to bag and tag, and they didn't.
Exactly. It was DPW. Them and the San Francisco Police Department had taken everything we owned, from our medications to our clothes, our cooking, our food, everything. We were left with nothing.
They even took your meds, as I understand it.
Yes, I have COPD, and my fiancé is diabetic, and they took his insulins and my chronic medication. And when I had called the police department and asked them about my things, you know, and explained to them, they asked me, what, you need an ambulance, or it's open season. And I asked him what he referred as open season. And it meant to the homeless.
Open season on the homeless.
Exactly.
This is, of course, a troubling story, and I recognize your concern with all your belongings taken and so forth. But there was a cop who just gave you a $20 bill, wasn't there?
Yes. An officer had, after the next morning when they had came and realized that we slept on the street with no covers, no blankets, with nothing, the officer did give us $20 and told us to get something to eat, you know.
Tell us a little bit. And by the way, you can actually go on our website and find a 360-degree immersion video that shows the inside of the tent that Jackie and her fiancé, whose name is Gus, live in, plus some scenes of their daily life at our website, kqed.org/forum. And if you click on the button on the top left of the video, you can actually see, as I said, a 360-degree view of each scene, similar to a Google Street View. Tell us about your daily life, Jackie.
Well, we get up in the morning, we have appointments, you know, and we go do it. You know, we start our morning off. It's like everything, then worry about packing everything up and having to take it with us, keep from it being taken from us, you know, or stolen from us. And, you know, we do our laundry and we just go to get food that will last us just for that day. So, you know, our things don't get taken again if it does, you know. And we try to get into shelters, but I'm like due, you know, now.
And you got a couple of adult kids too, don't you?
Excuse me?
You have a couple of adult children, don't you?
I have three adult children that live in Oregon.
Are you in contact with them?
Yes, I am.
And you're also, we should mention, a parolee.
Yes, I'm on parole, and I did a program at 16 months at Treasure Island, and they were promised to give us housing, and that never happened.
You can't get into the shelters. Why?
The shelter, I even, on top of being pregnant, of my COPD, the doctor wrote me a medical letter stating from the lung specialist that for me to get in doors because I'm going to be starting on oxygen. And they told me there's a lot of people out in the doors that something medically is wrong with them. And I understand that, you know.
But you've managed to avoid, the police took your meds, but you managed to avoid like meth and other drugs of that sort.
Oh, I don't do drugs. No.
And you keep yourself clean?
Yeah, I try to. I try to present myself, you know, clean when we can. If I have to just go and do like a bird bath, that's just wiped down. And, you know, the last time, like I said, we went to just go take a shower and follow the rules that we had to do just to get to a shower and get our TB shot. And then when we came back, all of our belongings, that's when our belongings were gone.
Again, Jackie Juarez here with us in studios, homeless, lives in a tent with her fiancé, Gus, and she is pregnant 9 months. And good luck with the birth of your child.
Thank you.
I want to go to Harmony Taylor, who's also here with us, a homeless student at Skyline College, 24, studying to be a paralegal and getting some assistance. But essentially, you're a couch surfer, what they call a couch surfer, you, depending on the kindness of your friends.
Yeah, basically friends and, like, close family members. Since I was evicted from my grandmother's house at 35 years in Hunters Point, San Francisco, basically I was evicted illegally around April of this year, causing me to move out with friends and family. Couch surfing, I don't really have too much family being emancipated out of the foster care at a young age. So I kind of depend on classmates, close friends, people.
You put out of foster care before you were even 18 years old with no resources, right?
Yeah, 17 and a half.
That's what they call emancipation.
Yeah, emancipation. Yeah, before I'm adult, I move out on my own into my own apartment with my diploma, everything before I turn 18 if I meet the requirements. That's what it means to
me. Well, I know it's been a struggle for you, and your parents were on drugs. That was part of the problem, too.
Yes.
But they're putting a lot of kids out on, without any resources, as I said, out of foster care. You're on a wait list for Section 8?
Yes, I'm on a waiting list for Section 8 and all low-income housing in San Francisco. Also, the transition and age youth program. I should be on the waiting list for the transition and
And you age. Just lost your job to top everything else.
yeah, I just recently lost my job due to my juvenile record, being under 18, running away from home and just really not cooperating because of the moving around in foster care.
What's the longest you've spent on somebody's couch? I mean, how does it run in terms of times?
Well, it depends how lenient the person is. Most of the time, I get sincere people because, you know, I go to school, I get up and work, I show an effort. But I'll say like 3 to 4 days max. Like I try not to overdo it, like be overwhelming or be bills on anyone because I don't have a job. But maybe like 2 or 3 days max, like where I can just get it together, wash my clothes for those 2 or 3 days or just take a shower and get myself together or do my homework at, you know, my friend's house without having to just stay at school all day.
But needless to say, you would love a place for yourself, right?
Yes, I would love a place. That's all I'm asking for, you know, is a stable home to come home to without having to, you know, get out of class and have to ask friends or family if I can come over just until the next morning just to lay my head.
But except for a few, nobody really knows you're homeless, right?
No. I don't really, like, spread the word too much. I keep it kind of private. Not because I'm ashamed, but more because a lot of people is judgmental. And I kind of know it's just a temporary position. So I try to keep it in my mind frame that it's a temporary position, because if it gets, you know, out to everyone, most people don't look at it as being a temporary position. Most people look at it as you being down or taking a downfall or taking a loss or just hitting rock bottom when, you know, in all actuality, stuff just happened to people in general.
You don't need that, right? You got enough things to contend with. Right?
Yes,
enough challenges and tough stuff. Well, again, Harmony Taylor with us, a homeless student. We want a broad range of people experiencing homelessness. And Mark, as we call him here, is also with us, currently living in his truck, and he's been homeless for about a year. A lot of your homelessness, I mean, you were kind of upper middle class down in the South Bay and all that.
Yes, sir.
And you've also been keeping your homelessness pretty much from your family and from people who love you and care about you.
Mm-hmm.
This happened not only because of loss of job, but I mean, loss of work during the recession and all that to you, but you went through some pretty tough traumas, loss of loved ones, friends, close friends, yeah?
I buried a lot of people, yes, sir.
You just had a siege of death in your life?
Just a run of losing a lot of very close friends who were very dear to me, starting in an airline disaster, and then my best friend, who was also my best man, and they were the ones that kept my marriage together. That was a little less than desirable.
Yeah, okay. But how did you actually become homeless without a roof over your head?
How did
that happen?
I was trying to get myself back from the recession and everything, and I was renting a room here in the area, and I ended up getting forced out, essentially. And I just did not have enough money to get my own place. I wasn't ready. And so here I am now.
Here you are. And what's it like day to day for you?
It's quite a challenge. It keeps you on your toes. Like, you know, I'm trying to keep all of this secretive from a lot of people. And it takes a lot of planning and coordination.
You're almost like
this.
Living an espionage life.
Yeah.
And what about, I mean, you're hopeful, though. I mean, you feel you're getting some work now, and you feel you mm-hmm. might be in permanent housing fairly soon, or hope to be.
Yes, that's my goal. That's my plan. Where I am staying right now, I guess I've been voted most likely to get out and get my own place.
But now you wake up in your truck, right?
I wake up in my truck, and this morning I woke up to the authorities asking me to leave. So I was hoping to get a little more sleep for your show today.
It's all right. We'll keep you awake in here. But you also have to worry about things like getting towed, and you have to pay for car insurance and tickets maybe now and then.
I mean, I have all of that taken care of. My registration is current. My driver's license is current. I have full coverage insurance. You know, getting that big lump sum for a deposit on an apartment is quite a challenge. I can't cook for myself and save money that way. I have to rely on other places to go to. And so, you know, the food bill goes way up
very
quickly.
But you eat healthy, right?
I do try to eat healthy, yes, sir.
And you, at this point, like a lot of mostly men out there living in their cars. In fact, you've noticed some of them in park and drive in Mercedes Benzes and things like that.
I've seen a lot of very nice Mercedes with people living in those, Audis, all of the upper expensive cars. Yes, I see the full gamut.
And at this point, you're also actually getting some psychological help, and you've got medical coverage. You're okay on those scores?
Right now, yes.
So,
and yes, I'm getting some psychological help because through all of this and all of the losses, I just hit a wall to where I could barely function.
Now you're able to maybe scale that wall, or?
I'm going to break it down.
Break through the wall. Bust those bricks, as it were. Speaking to a guy who's worked construction, break those bricks. Mark again is with us and is homeless, currently living in his truck, has been homeless for about a year. We also have Pastor Lane Amos here in studio, and she's homeless, currently lives in the Navigation Center. It's a temporary housing center for homeless people. We've talked about it on 16th and Mission, and they're building more Navigation Centers, lots of plans in the works. Does that work pretty well for you, Pastor?
Well, the Navigation Center I'm at right now has been very, very good. They're very fast about getting some people their housing, but it all depends on what you're looking for. And the criteria that is wrong with the person. With me and my husband, I have a lot of disabilities.
I'm in a wheelchair,
and that became very bad out there. Being homeless, it got worse. I got very, very sick. But in Navigation, we have to wait a little bit longer. But if you have all your business and everything together, all your paperwork, you know, it goes a little fast. If you're not particular picky about where you're going to move, it can go a lot faster.
So you've been homeless for 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years.
A lot of that had to do with being in an abusive relationship and getting into drugs?
Yeah. When I got into drugs, that was a lot 38 years ago. And the husband that I was married to at that time, he's deceased. And well, the homeless came when I first lost my kids, and then it was very hard. The depression and everything led me into drugs, and it was kind of hard to try to get a place, to keep a place.
Lost your kids because they were taken from you?
No, my mother took my kids because of an abusive relationship I was in.
But you could still see them
and interact
with them?
Oh, yeah. I see them all the time. Now I got a lot of grandkids, too.
Yeah, well, that's always a word you would use for that would be a blessing.
Yes, it is.
And what about the police in your life? I mean, in your life of being homeless for 20 years, harassment, criminalization, homelessness, those kinds of things?
Being homeless with the police was a horror. It was very, very horrible. I mean, I would have nightmares about worrying about the police come taking my things, or they would come hit on your tent. You know, one of them came 10 o'clock at night when my husband was in L.A. With my wheelchair, and I had an air mattress bed. I had a very huge, huge tent because I did counseling. I counseled people in there, did Bible study, had communion. So I had a lot of stuff. And he told me at 10 o'clock at night to move my stuff. And he got upset because I didn't have a warrant on me. You know, and so he got kind of like an attitude. And I told him I wasn't going to leave until the next day until my husband got there. And when he couldn't find a warrant or nothing wrong or nothing that I did, and when everybody was saying she doesn't do anything wrong, she helps us, he got kind of, okay, tomorrow you got to leave. But he didn't come back that next day. But when my husband got there, we had to move. It was so much stuff, we couldn't move too much further, so we moved right on Division.
I want to ask each of you, actually. Now, you've got a ministry, and you've found God, and are preaching, essentially, and trying to help people with your belief system. But other ways that the homeless problem can be addressed, or other ways from your experiences, I know, for example, you think that there could be more buildings, some of these abandoned buildings, more taxes to build things to house people. But I'm wondering what you have to say, particularly in light of what we were talking about in the last hour, just as a message to people to recognize their humanity and the needs of homeless people, what kind of advice or wisdom you would give to them?
Well, you know, if the people, they need to come out and see what's really going on instead of sitting in their big glass houses and labeling us as all as drug addicts. Come out there and spend time with us. Really talk to us and see what's going on. See the kind of hardship that we are having. And stop trying to put us down, because you never know. You can have all this one day and anything can happen where you will lose it all. An earthquake, tornado, anything can happen where it will be gone, and you will be right down there with us, and we will be the people that are going to help you. Don't depend on too much of the people in high offices that are helping you, because we are all taking care of each other.
There's a kind of brotherhood, sisterhood among the homeless, where they help each other as opposed to getting the help that they need from outside. Mark, can you add to that from your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, where we stay, we kind of police each other, help each other. Support each other, But you know, I can say everybody that's around us, everybody needs some sort of psychological help on one level or another.
But you also need empathy. You need recognition. You need people to realize maybe what it would be like to walk in your shoes and experience. In fact, Harmony, some thoughts from you on that. Just on that sense of what people should know or what you'd like them to know.
Just the same, like recognition, because when people look at me as a student, especially as a paralegal student, you know, they look at students to go home to their parents or go home to their families or go home to their houses and study and get ready for school in the morning. They don't really think about people leaving paralegal classes that don't have a home to go to or do not have a house or do not have basically nowhere to go before they can even say, let me wake up and go to school tomorrow. So it's kind of a recognition that students also, you know, go through the same thing. You don't have to look a certain way or be a certain age or be on drugs just to be homeless. Like, homelessness can happen to anyone, to young adults, to minorities, non-minorities, to anyone. Like, it can happen to, if you're a millionaire one day, to people coming from the ghettos and the hoods and the poverty. Like, homelessness is not something you're born into. It's something that happens. Like,
so recognize the humanity of it, but also recognize that it could be you, I think is what you're saying. And yes. Jackie, can I get something from you on this?
I feel when they, like, come out and try to get you to move, have a solution. You know, a solution that, you know, a place for you to go, not try to take your stuff from you. You know, as like Harmony and Russ was saying, you know, we count on the, not really count on them, but when we're staying behind U-Haul, we all like look out for each other. You know, we watch each other's stuff. And, you know, with the Navigation Center, when, you know, I was told that, you know, right now that they're trying to open up several other centers for the homeless to go into. But that could be in 2017. And there's some of it, as myself, as I speak, you know, I have an income a month, you know. And then when you go try to apply for an apartment or somewhere and they look at you and you tell them, you know, well, I'm homeless, I don't have an address.
Right away, the stigma.
Exactly. The signals come up and you know, and it's not there. And I know, speaking on myself, you know.
When they add parolee to you, that's even parolees more, and all that, another stigma, yeah.
You know.
We're coming up on a break. I want to bring our listeners into this. Some of you may have questions for our guests about their personal stories that you've heard to a degree here. You may want to bring in your own thoughts. In fact, certainly welcome those who have been out on the streets or have experienced homelessness in any way to join this conversation. But we do welcome your involvement in the program, and there are a number of ways you can join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you. That number is 866-733-6786. You can call us and join the program. Any questions or comments are welcome. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Please feel free to join us with Mark, with Jackie Juarez, Pastor Elaine Amos, and Harmony Taylor. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As part of our In My Experience programming, we have a number of people who are homeless with us here in studio, and over 6,600 people are homeless in San Francisco. That's according to a 2015 count by the city. And we're talking really about homelessness with a wide range of people who experience it in different ways, barrier residents taking us inside their day-to-day lives and sharing the personal stories behind the statistics. With us in studio is Jackie Juarez, who lives in a tent with her fiancé, and she's 9 months pregnant. And the tent is not far from us here at KQED, in fact, as we've mentioned. Mark is also with us. He's homeless, currently lives in his truck, and has been homeless for about a year. Chooses just to be known as Mark, and just told me off air that the house that he did live in when before he became homeless just sold on the market for what, $1.3 million, or
over in a few years ago, yes,
yeah, over in the South Bay. Pastor Elaine Amos, homeless, currently lives in the Navigation Center, a temporary housing center for homeless people on 16th and Mission. And Harmony Taylor is a homeless student at Skyline. She's 24, studying to be a paralegal. We do welcome your involvement in the program. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Let's go to your phone calls, and let me begin, Kim, with you. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank thank you for everything you do, Michael. I love your show. And thank you to the people who are there today. I wanted to know if anyone has any recommendations for talking to children about homelessness. You know, my children will see someone who doesn't have a home, and they'll say, look, a homeless. And I feel like they're putting a label on what I say to them. It's, you know, that's a person who happens to be homeless. But I'd like some suggestions on how to discuss it with children.
Who would like to respond to her about how to talk to children about homelessness?
I will. Well, for an example, yesterday there was some,
Jackie Juarez.
There was like five little boys that was homeless, and they were staring at us. And their mom told them, "Don't look at them. They're homeless. Don't talk to them." And I had spoke up, and I said, "I told them. I said, yes, I am homeless, but I won't. We will not hurt you, you know." And the little boy started talking to me, asking me how I ate and how I did it, and I started showing him my stove, you know, little things that I do. You know, I don't know if that will help you or not. But maybe kind of explain to them that it's people that's unfortunate that's out there, you know, that we're still good people.
Anybody else want to add, Mark?
Yes.
I know a lot of very good people who are homeless. They just had a run of bad luck or a couple of issues that happened. Other than that, if they were a lot of people I know, if you saw them on the street, you would never know.
Pastor Lane?
Pastor Ames, as Jackie said, to get to the children, you let them know that we're harmless people. We're people just like them, that we have children too. And it's children out there that are homeless too. You know, that we won't hurt them. You know, to let them know, be kind to them.
There are,
you know,
of course, homeless people who are harmful. There are,
There are pedophile homeless people among the
regular general population.
Yes.
Yeah, Harmony?
They're all kind, just like...
I would say, basically, like, talking to children, I would be like, hey, honey, you know, basically, people get in this situation sometimes. They maybe just don't have a home right now, or the housing isn't too good, you know, in San Francisco, or they do have a home. There's just shelters and they're overcrowded right now, or just not try to make it seem like what it's not, but try to give a more understanding statement to children, like,
I think you can just say they're people just like we are.
Yeah,
you got good
exactly.
people and bad people, right? And,
exactly.
Yeah, and some of them are down on their luck, and some of them have had a hard time. And you know. Let me thank you for that call, Kim. It's good to hear from you. Let me go to another caller. Alicia, you're on. Morning.
Hello. I've been living out of a very small RV, about 13-foot long. It's a fiberglass RV. It's called Skimp. And I've designed it into a high-tech mobile studio apartment just because I've had some rough times. I was an Air Force veteran, did 8 years, 3 deployments, came back with some depression. It's you know, I think when people see it, I think of a homeless person, like when they would see people see me, they would never know because I don't get high, I don't drink, I don't smoke. I'm a tech worker when I can get work. It's just hard for me sometimes to keep those jobs because I'm not really.
Alicia, let me say, if you looked at the four people in the studio with me, none of them look any kind of stereotypical way.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all different.
I just think a lot of the listeners, a lot of people, especially some people that I've worked with that live in the NPR, may think they have an image of what a homeless person is. And what they think that a person should look like. I think our society right now, the big problem around this area is basically the cost of living, jobs, and the huge income inequality that we have across the whole country. But here it's amplified because everyone's out to grab gold in the real estate market right now.
Okay, Alicia, I thank you for that call. And we'll go to more of your calls in a moment. I want to go to a question that's coming online. Stacy says, I'm curious how San Francisco helps pregnant moms who are homeless and babies who are born to homeless parents. Perhaps I'm ignorant, but are there babies living in the streets in San Francisco? Is there anything citizens can do? As a mom of 2 young kids, it breaks my heart. Well, you're about to give birth, Jackie.
Well, let me explain that. Some of the shelters say that it's okay to live in a shelter with a newborn baby. That's not true. I had called 3 to 4 different hospitals, I believe, well, let's say 3, here in San Francisco that stated to me, an RN that works in the maternity ward, stated to me, if I am brought in an ambulance, if I look like I'm homeless, if I am out in the street, if I'm in a shelter, newborn babies are not allowed in the shelter. They are not allowed in the shelter. So
we'll have to check up on that.
And they did state that your baby will be taken from you.
We'll see where we can find out more on that score. I'm just struck by the fact that there are now so many homeless families, and they are indeed, as the caller suggests, often they do include small children and babies. Let me thank Stacy for that, and let me go to another of your calls. Let me get Kevin on next. Kevin, you're on.
Hi.
Hi there. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Great. Terrific. So I just wanted to share a story. I have a 6-year-old son named Thayer, and we live down in Redwood City in a nice area. But we go visit a homeless group of people that we've become very close to underneath the 101. And we go down there probably once every week and have an opportunity to get to know them on a very intimate level, to the extent that one of them passed away not too long ago, which was really devastating to this community. And we had the chance, because we were so close to them, to participate in the funeral and the ceremonies afterwards. And essentially, as a result of this interaction that we have with my son, we've become a part of their community. And it's really been, I think, for my son's benefit to a great degree, because he's seeing a life outside of Menlo Park and Palo Alto, seeing what's real and what people experience on a day-to-day basis and the struggle that they go through. So I commend the homeless. The people that I've had the opportunity to meet, I've grown as a result of the interactions I've had with them.
Well, commend you, and thank you for the call. You're talking about educating children. That certainly seems to be a good and effective method. Here's a listener who writes, and this is for all of you here in studio with me. Can you please describe exactly, he puts in caps, or she puts in caps, what services you would like provided to help you get you and your cohorts off the streets? And because I feel that in the Bay Area, the desire of the citizens is in place, the money is in place, the staffing is in place, but the direction is not. Services that you would like, Mark?
I would say, from my experiences, psychological and the opportunity to be able to make money, and maybe if they could somehow lend money to get a deposit down on an apartment, that would be really nice.
So counseling and borrow money to borrow. Anybody want to add anything else to that,
yes,
Harmony?
I would definitely say, Mark was saying, just basically the budgeting, because the money is here. They definitely need more transitional housing, for youth and stuff coming basically out of the system or foster care or whatever the situation is, that's hit 18 and the only option they can have is basically homelessness, when there's only 2 transitional housing in the whole San Francisco, housing only 30 kids at a time, that's 18. When in fact, we're coming out of foster care and we can't go into a 4-year university affording $50,000 and $60,000 in dormitory fees to stay there. So maybe just more housing, more opportunities, more programs that let youth know, and just adults know in general, about homelessness, how to be resourceful when we do become homelessness. Because when I became homeless, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who to call. I didn't have the resources. And basically being in San Francisco, being one of the biggest cities, I should feel like it should have been a list of resources that I can go to, being, a youth, foster care, being emancipated, basically becoming homeless. And the only resources I've been able to find is, if you're a youth or a young adult, you would need to have a child basically to get into our program or our transitional housing, because we go for the more emergency needs first. But in fact, it shouldn't be emergency needs or regular needs. Everyone should be treated the same that's homeless, no matter if you're in a worse situation or not.
Yeah, I can't help thinking about hearing you and Mark talk. Former Mayor Gavin Newsom had a program called Care Not Cash, but I think I'm hearing maybe cash and care, or some way to bring the two together. I want to go to more of our callers, but a listener writes, why not move somewhere more affordable? I'm sure some of you hear this from time to time. We're living in one of the most expensive cities in the country. Would it be reasonable to suggest maybe picking up and going out of San Francisco or the Bay Area?
We tried to, Pastor Amos, we tried to get out of San Francisco. I would love to move out of San Francisco. But out of San Francisco, the places are starting to get expensive, too, because they know that people are trying to leave San Francisco to find affordable housing. So for them to make money, they're raising their prices. And some of them don't want the people here in San Francisco.
I've got to read a tweet here because, Jackie, I was a little bit concerned when you said, you know, you can't come in here with a baby. Lisa tweets, San Francisco absolutely has shelters exclusively for families. Compass Family Services manages the waiting list for these shelters. And there are other family services, Rafael House, which I mentioned a couple of occasions here, for example. Another question from Dan. What toll has being homeless taken on your guests mentally? It's a broad question, but, you know, you hear that people get homeless and it affects their mental health. Yeah.
My Pastor Amos, the mental health with my case is I cry out because it's very hurting. It's very hurting that I cry every night. It stresses me because to see, like, I deal with a lot of pregnant girls who are almost having their baby. And I cry to see them out there and see people getting killed, the homeless dying. I have this, and I talk with them constantly, and it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming where I cry myself to sleep, wishing that it was just something that would just fall out the sky or something where I can just help everyone.
You're feeling these people suffering and pain.
Yes,
you're internalizing it.
Yes, I do.
You know, I feel it's very stressful every night.
Jackie Juarez, yeah.
Sorry, Jackie Juarez.
No, it's okay.
Every night that me and my fiancé lay our head down, are we going to wake up in the morning? You know, are we going to get shot through our tent for, you know, for being homeless? Or are we going to wake up in the morning and we have to move our stuff? It's very, very stressful every single day, every minute of the day of being out there.
Yes. Let me bring in more of our callers. And we go next to Lynn in San Jose. Lynn, you're on with us. Morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I'm homeless, and I have been since November 31st. My situation also, I'm trying to keep it undercover. I work for a large tech company, and I drive shuttle in the South Bay, and nobody knows. A few employees, fellow coworkers know. I sleep in my car. I get up every morning, and I go to the gym, and I've been proactive in my health. I am on food stamps because, and I'm not going to I don't qualify anymore. This is my last month, but I am proactive in trying to keep it undercover and realizing that even though I cry myself to sleep at night as well, this is a temporary situation. And it's really hard to be able to be open with people because of the stigma attached. They automatically assume the worst and think the worst of you. But every situation is different with homelessness. In my situation, I had to walk away from a 14-year marriage because of post-traumatic that my ex-husband came home with, and it destroyed my family.
I'm so sorry you went through that, Lynn. And I hope you can get through this and find yourself with some shelter. And thank you so much for calling in and telling your story. I really do appreciate that. And let me get to another caller here. We've got a lot of people on the line here, and I want to get to as many of you as I can. Arlene, welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much. Thank you for your programming. I listen to you every morning. I've worked at Glide as a member of the Glide community since the 80s with the homeless. And one of the things I've noticed, I've gone and taken clothes and given them out in front of Glide. I've worked in all of their 89 programs, their clinics, their food programs. And Glide set aside a space for women because women have a particular problem where they are feeling like the last caller in an abusive situation, and one of your guests there was affected by an abusive situation. And then these lines are dominated by men, and sometimes that becomes overwhelming and makes them feel unsafe. So, you know, that's one of the things Glide has done in creating a woman's program that's sponsored by Wells Fargo as well as others. And, you know, it's a very underserved community. And as the last woman spoke, you know, it's also unseen in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of homeless women who aren't out, you know, to the public and aren't lying on the streets, but are still part of the economically disadvantaged of this city. And, you know, as we're hearing, this world is so much economically disadvantaged.
All right, Lena, I'm glad that you not only brought up the good work that Glide Memorial does under Cecil Williams, but also the vulnerability of women. I mean, homeless people are vulnerable in general, but women have, of course, other vulnerabilities that one recognizes, and I thank you for that, for bringing it into recognition. I want to get Martha on here, who has actually a response way for you, Jackie, specifically. Martha, go ahead.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Jackie, I don't know if you've heard of the homeless prenatal program, but we're right around the corner from KQED, and we would love to have you stop in after the show and ask for Carrie Hamilton.
Carrie Hamilton, okay.
She does outreach in the streets.
Oh, okay. I will stop by.
Yes, please do. And
thank you.
You don't have much time, and we want to be able to help you.
Exactly.
Martha, that's good of you to offer. But what about the fear of child services? How do you deal with that? There is, I think, Jackie,
they're going to get involved when I go in to have him, you know.
Have you been getting prenatal care?
When I was in Union City, yes.
Okay. So one of the problems, Jackie, is when you show up at the hospital and you don't really have a stable place to go to, they do intervene.
Uh-huh.
But if you're working with agencies in the community and it's that you have a safe place to take your infant,
okay,
then, you know, it's a different story.
Right.
Good. Martha, good of you to call.
Thank you so much.
You betcha.
Yeah,
take
thank
care.
You. And here's a question from Mike. Despite what many people think, the homeless population is not the same as the street people population. Does this confusion bother today's guests?
That's a good point.
Mark,
there's some people out there who wish to be completely out of society, whether it's mental illness and drugs and alcohol. But we're not that part.
There's also often a criminality, at least associated with some of the so-called street people. And, you know, you've been talking about concerns about homelessness being criminalized. So obviously you don't want that identification. And
it's not deserving of us.
No, exactly. Let me bring more of our callers in here. And we go next, George, to you. You're on. Morning.
Hi. Good morning. I just want to say, first of all, I'm glad that you're bringing to light all this homeless situation in the area. I mean, it goes up and down the peninsula from San Francisco all the way to San Jose and further. And my question is that, you know, we had great mental facilities back in the early 80s that were able to house people that had a mental illness and help them. And, you know, why did we close this down? Why, back in San Jose, for example, we had a facility called Agnes Hospital. And not only that, they had a homeless shelter for family mothers, that were being abused, and they closed it all down, you know. And as a community healthcare worker, you know, it hurts me to see all this, you know.
Well, it's good of you to call and to share those emotions with us, George, and I thank you for that, as well as the history down there. Thank you again. And let me go down to San Mateo. Suzanne, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I was homeless. I've been rehoused for 9.5 years now in San Mateo. I was homeless. I was sick of paying ridiculous amounts to rent a room and then people having their thumb over me. I didn't even realize I was homeless until this last time, all those times I was couch surfing. Anyway, I tried to move to Oregon. This is about 14, 15 years ago. I ended up making myself homeless. That's where I was born and raised, and I was trying to move right outside Portland before it was hip to do so. Apartments were going for $400 when a room was $500 or $600 here in San Mateo area. But they didn't have the support services, and at the time there was no Part D, and there was no, every state runs their Medicaid differently, so, you know, it's apples and oranges, Oregon health plan to Medi-Cal, et cetera. So it's just not possible to up and move somewhere else, even when you want to. I'm trying to look at it now, again, and I'm afraid it would make me homeless if I you know.
No, Suzanne, thank you for expressing those fears. This is why I suppose one of the listeners said, why not just up and move? It's often a lot more difficult than many people realize, even if you're homeless and have no roof over your head. And I thank you for that call. I'm just wondering, Mark, where do you store your stuff? What do you do about that?
I have a storage that I pay monthly to keep everything. I've got full kitchen, bed. I have my tools in there.
Sometimes stay in there, too?
No, don't stay there.
Never stay there, yeah.
But there's not enough room. I'm trying to be very frugal, sir.
Yeah. Well, what about the rest of you? I mean, in terms of where you put your stuff. Harmony?
Well, me, I keep my clothes and my products, like, at different people's houses. Just my close friends that I know I can trust. I keep my valuables on me most of the time. And also in my lockers in school. Like, if I'm at school, I will put my stuff in my lockers and go buy a lock just to keep my valuables in my locker, because I know, you know, I'm at school basically every day, so I'll keep it in my lockers or a close friend house. I'll keep my hygiene and valuables on me.
And Jackie?
I rented a storage.
You rented a storage place?
Yes.
And what did you do, Pastor Amos? Or what do you do?
When I was in my tents, I had a very huge tent, and I just kept my stuff in plastic bags and suitcases.
And here's another caller who is homeless by choice. Michael, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to give a different perspective that not everybody's down and out. Like, for years I lived in San Francisco and I was struggling with the rising prices, and I was renting and I was self-employed. And over the last 4 or 5 years, I've just gradually reduced my life, and I bought a van and I live out of my van now. And I had a large support network of my family and friends, and was able to just have a better quality of life by actually being homeless. So.
How do you respond to that, Mark?
I know a couple of people who are like that right now by choice.
Yeah.
One person in particular, he could go and buy a house tomorrow, he says.
What do you think would be the effect if you told your daughters, for example, who do not know that you're homeless? I know there's a lot of shame involved in that.
Yeah.
That's a big element, but probably still love you, wouldn't they, and accept you?
Yeah, I would expect that, yes.
Yeah. Let me get Dawn on here from Vallejo. Dawn, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call again. You know, I want to say that this panel is a perfect example of homeless people who do not have serious drug problems, who do not have serious psychological problems, and who might benefit from families that are interested in sharing their homes until they can get their feet on the ground. I'd like to hear from them how they feel about this, if it's something they think would help them.
Actually, she did call in the last hour and said, and thought this was a capital idea, putting and the response we got from some of the people who work with the homeless is there would be a lot of disruption and possible chaos. This is not necessarily an ideal thought. I think the people who are here with me this morning would be perfectly amenable to a situation like that, and probably would not cause much in the way of difficulties or disruption and so forth. But just in terms of the idea in general, how do you respond to it? You go to live with a family and they take you in, basically.
I would love it.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's all I'm pretty much looking for, because I have had my own apartments before, like since being emancipated. I had 3 apartments, and just recently having to take over my grandmother's house, her being diagnosed with dementia, her rent being $1,200, her bills being $400, me being a full-time student, working at my school, giving it up and stuff, it has been less stressful. So just living with a family, paying them $500 instead of going to pay my rent for $1,500, saving my money until I can get out of school. Like, if people, you know, living with a family, that's it's just more sincere even if I was able to get my own apartment. I would just rather be more in a situation of, you know, being able to save my money, being with the support, because even when I do have my own apartment, who knows to know I'm not going to get thrown in my own apartment with no support and just all these bills and chaos and even more stress.
But this could be a win-win. I mean,
exactly.
In the sense that you're talking about $500, you know, a lot of families would really welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
Put you up in the attic or the basement or on a couch, whatever.
Exactly, and that's what I'm looking for, share housing, like in San Francisco.
We used to call them boarders back in the day when I was growing up. You'd have a boarder living in the a house in my working class neighborhood, and the fact is it was not that uncommon. There's some. What about other ideas? So you were asked, and all of you responded thoughtfully about, you know, what to do in terms of what services can be provided and so forth. We just got seconds left, though. What would come right to the top in terms of what can be done, what ordinary citizens can do? Yeah,
Pastor Amos, I think that I see a lot of people with psychiatric problems. I think we could really use some dual diagnosed programs for drug abusers with psychiatric problems, you know, because I see them out in the streets, you know, and they're losing it and eating out of garbage cans and on drugs. But everybody don't have that problem.
Here's a good place that we could conclude with. I mean, because there's a lot more need for those two extraordinary problems in terms of drug abuse and mental health. Mm-hmm. A lot more resources needed and a lot more help needed for people. Thank you for that, Pastor Amos. And thank you all for being with us this hour. And let me extend thanks not only to Pastor Amos, but to Harmony Taylor, Mark, and Jackie Juarez. And again, you can find the 360-degree immersion video showing the inside of Jackie's tent with her fiancé, Gus, plus some scenes of their daily life at our website, kqed.org/forum. And thank you for being a part of this morning's program. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Judy Campbell, and Jeremy Siegel. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Joanne Wallace. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.